You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
We have gay marriage here in the United States of America, as I think everyone is now aware, but we still have our religious idiots. Religious idiot of the day, conservative activist E.W. Jackson, who, friendly atheist, drew our attention to this. In an interview with WorldNet Daily's David somebody or other, said that we know same-sex sex. We know homosexuality is unnatural because little children find it icky. That if you let two little kids look at two men kissing, or you explain gay sex to them, they go, ew, gross. Of course, if you explain where babies come from to small children, daddy puts his penis in mommy's vagina and moves it around until something leaps out of it, and then that becomes you. Kids typically go, ew, gross. Rarely, when you explain heterosexual sex and where babies come from to a small child, do you get a reaction like, oh my goodness, doesn't that sound lovely? I'm looking forward to experiencing sweet, sweet heterosexual intercourse after marrying an opposite sex partner who, like me, will be a virgin on our wedding day. Kids don't say that when you explain straight sex to them. They say, ick. Little kids, even the ones who grow up to be straight, they think sex, gay, straight, everything in between is completely gross and utterly disgusting. And, you know, they have a point. And if we're going to start declaring things unnatural because kids find the icky, then we're going to have to get the broccoli out of the supermarket. So, yeah, we still have our anti-gay religious idiots here in the United States, and we tolerate them. They're allowed to go on their little radio shows and say their very stupid things, and then free speech, we're allowed to critique the very stupid things they say on our little podcasts. And tolerance. I'm tolerating this religious bigot saying these stupid things, but I'm, of course, responding. In Australia, they have their anti-gay religious bigots too, who are all up in arms, and everyone's paying attention to every idiot thing they say right now, because Australia is having a plebiscite on gay marriage. A plebiscite is a vote of sorts. It's a mail-in ballot, and everybody gets to say yes or no to same-sex marriage in Australia, where public opinion polls already show that same-sex marriage enjoys overwhelming popular support in the 70-80% range. But the cowardly shitbags who run the government in Australia won't just allow Parliament to have a vote on same-sex marriage. They are going to go hide behind this plebiscite. They're asking the public for its opinion, and it's non-binding. If the public could vote 98% for same-sex marriage, and it doesn't then force the Australian government to enact it. It's not an up or down vote on legalizing same-sex marriage. It's just, how you feeling about same-sex marriage? Which is data that is already available to the douchebag, cowardly politicians who run Australia, because public opinion polls. Australia is spending $158 million on this plebiscite. The ballots have been mailed to the public. They have until November 7th to get them back. And all of this money is being spent to basically recreate the data that already exists. It's a public poll, and public polling already exists. But they're having a vote, and it's bringing out Australia's conservative Christian crazies, one of whom, tennis legend Margaret Court, said today that gay people, same-sex couples, they want to destroy marriage and not just marriage. If the plebiscite passes and if Australia legalizes same-sex marriage, there will be no Mother's Day, no Father's Day, no Easter, no Christmas. If only there was some way to test this theory of Margaret Court's and all these other crazy Australian anti-queer bigots. If only same-sex marriage was legal anyplace else, and we could see if they're still having Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, and Christmas in those places. Hey, wait, what is that? This just in, same-sex marriage, legal in New Zealand, right next door. Also legal in Canada, fellow Commonwealth member, the United Kingdom, Spain, France, now Germany, the United States, the Netherlands, Sweden, lots of places same-sex marriage is legal. So this has been tested. We have test cases out there in the world available to these hysterical anti-queer bigots like Margaret Court in Australia that shows that not only does same-sex marriage not extinguish or destroy or end Christmas, but lots of same-sex couples, and you can dig into Instagram to find evidence of this, lots of married same-sex couples celebrate Christmas, put up fucking Christmas trees. Have no interest in destroying marriage, wanting to be a part of marriage, but no interest also in ending Christmas necessarily. In my Instagram account, you can dig through and you will find evidence that Terry and I celebrate Christmas as a married same-sex couple. There's a lot of idiocy sloshing around right now. Familiar idiocy. That's what's so frustrating about following the news in Australia. It's like we have to have this argument again. Not to drag myself into it, but there was an Australian senator whose name I don't remember and I'm not in a Googling mood, who attacked me because of monogamish and argued that same-sex couples shouldn't be allowed to marry because, this hoary old saw, gay male couples aren't so into monogamy. And if you are in Australia and you are having arguments with family and they bring this up, or they bring up religion as the reason to oppose same-sex marriage rights, or children as a reason to oppose same-sex marriage rights, I gift you this. You don't have to be monogamous, have children, or be religious to be married if you're straight. These are not standards that straight people apply to themselves or each other when straight people apply for marriage licenses or get married. You can be married and not monogamous so long as you're straight. In Australia, you can be married and have kids or not if you're straight. You can be married and get married at church or married at a courthouse if you're straight. It's up to you. Marriage is whatever the two people in it say that it is. And people who condemn same-sex couples who wish to marry on the grounds of religion, children, and monogamy, what they're telling you, telling straight Australians who may be listening to me right now, is they're not comfortable with straight marriage, with marriage as straight people have redefined it and practice it now. It's not gay couples. I can't believe we're saying all this again. If you listen to podcasts from 8 years ago, you can hear me saying this then during the marriage debate in the United States. Marriage is not being redefined by same-sex couples. Recognizing the right of same-sex couples to marry now is to recognize how thoroughly straight people redefined marriage. Marriage used to be a property transaction where one man took possession of another man's daughter, his possession, his daughter, and that transubstantiated in that moment, and that became a new possession called wife. And to their credit, straight people about 100 years ago, took them a long time to figure this shit out, decided that marriage shouldn't be a property transaction, and that marriage should be the legal union of two autonomous individuals. Period. The end. The reason you can't make a rational argument against same-sex couples marrying without leaning on Leviticus, because then you have to argue against straight marriage. You have to argue against the way straight people marry now. So, Australia, we are with you. If you are voting in this plebiscite, and you should vote in this plebiscite, all registered voters in Australia are getting these ballots in the mail. Please mail them in before November 7th when they are due, even though this is just a popularity contest, even though this isn't necessarily going to result in Australia joining the Marriage Equality Club with Canada, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, the United States, most of Mexico, most of Europe. But it's going to be hard for the Australian government, after wasting $158 million, to continue to oppose legalizing same-sex marriage if indeed the plebiscite comes in big for equality. As I know it will, as I trust it will, as it will if all Australians who support equality for all and the right to marry for all get their ballots in by November 7th. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro-free edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q and lots of my big fat A. And coming up on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, Mark Joseph Stern from Slate joins us to discuss anti-Semitism on the left. All that on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is sponsored by omgyes.com. It's a website dedicated to getting scientific truths out there about women's sexual pleasure. They've partnered with IU Kinsey researcher and frequent Savage Love and Lovecast guest expert Debbie Herbenick to do the first ever peer-reviewed published research about what feels good for women and why. OMGS.com is like an encyclopedia of clitoral touching brought to life by women who swear by each technique. OMGS is not a subscription. It's a one-time payment, like buying yourself a book that you own forever. And Savage Lovecast listeners can get a 10% discount if they go to omgyes.com/savage.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout to get 10% off. That's squarespace.com, offer code SAVAGE.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by Zeal, the best way to find top local licensed and pre-screened massage therapists to come to your home anytime. Go to zeal.com and get $25 off your first massage by using the promo code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hey, Dan, a longtime listener. Thanks for what you do. I have a question. I am a straight mid-20s female, just started dating this awesome guy, but he is my first uncircumcised dick. Yeah, I feel like it's like mostly the same, but I was just wondering if you had any like tips, tricks, things I should know. I'm just kind of out of my element here, and you're obviously the one to ask.
There's really not that much of a difference between being with a cut guy versus an uncut guy. There's a little bit more skin. You may need to use a little bit less lube. There's kind of a built-in masturbation sleeve on an uncut dick. You can grip the skin and move it up and down the shaft, including the foreskin. If there's a problem with this foreskin, if it doesn't fully retract, that is an issue he needs to take up with his urologist. But otherwise, he'll get an erection. You can or should be able to roll the foreskin fully back and expose the glands. Guys who are uncut, typically the glands, the head of the cock, a little bit more sensitive since it's wrapped up all the time. It's not rattling around inside their underpants for however many years this person has been alive, unprotected, scraping against the sandpapery cotton. So yeah, uncut guys tend to be a little bit more sensitive. You may not be able to use your raspy cat tongue attachment for your Hitachi magic wand or whatever on that, but otherwise it functions pretty much the same way a cut dick functions. And as always, if you have questions about somebody's junk, how it works, how they like it to be handled or touched or stroked or prodded or poked or licked, you should ask them. I can give you some general pointers, a little bit of general guidance, but the expert on that uncut dick that you are going to be climbing on top of is the guy attached to it. Just like the expert on your pussy is you, and men should err on the side, and women and non-binaries err on the side of inquiring of their female partners what works for them, what feels good, what doesn't feel good. You should make the same good faith effort with your male partner. Want to know best practices for his dick? Ask him.
Hi, Dan. This is a purely empirical question. I was having a conversation the other night with a friend who is a high school teacher, and she was commenting on the number of her students who show up to class with hickeys on their necks, which led us into this discussion about the fact that we all remember giving and getting hickeys in high school. But as far as I know, it's a behavior that seems to stop abruptly right around age 18, 19. And we're trying to figure out why. Like, there doesn't seem to be a kink community out there devoted to the hickey, and it's a sexual behavior that seems to come instinctively to younger people. So you'd think that there would still be people, adults, who'd be into this, wildly into it, and maybe we're missing something, but there doesn't seem to be. So the question is, first of all, are we wrong? Are there whole fetish communities really, really into the hickey, the art of the hickey? And if we're not wrong, then the question is, why does this seem to stop so abruptly, besides the fact that it would be visible at work? You know what I mean? Around age 18, 19, 20. Thanks. Bye.
The visibility of the hickey is, of course, the point of the hickey for a young person. It is a signal. It's a sexual signal that says, I am doing this. I am having the sex, the least neck-gnawing section of the sex. I'm desirable. I am desired. I have a partner. I have what perhaps you don't have. It's a signal sent to other classmates in the high school environment about your sexual and social success. And then you outgrow the need to send those sorts of signals because you reach a stage, you reach an age, 18-ish, where you can just assume that most everyone is sexually active. At 15, 16, 17, that assumption doesn't fly. Most people aren't sexually active. So those who are and who are proud of it want to put up the hickey bat signal and let everybody know that they're getting it. They're getting their next nod, if nothing else. And people don't need to do that once they're in college because everybody, in theory at least, is presumed to be getting it. That said, if a thing exists, someone somewhere is masturbating about it right now. I'm sure if you went to Tumblr and started to dig around the Tumblr porn wormholes, you will eventually find a Tumblr page run by an adult that is dedicated to the hickey. Somewhere, someone somewhere is jacking off about that. But there doesn't seem to be a large hickey fetish community or a prominent one, and you don't see a lot of hickeys at fetish parties or play parties or kink events. But you do see people who are into bruising. There are people out there who are into impact play, and they can be very proud of their bruises and like to show them off. Those bruises typically aren't on the neck and aren't created with the mouth. A newly published study from OMGYes.com and researcher Debbie Herbenick shows that while 17% of women orgasm from penetration without clitoral stimulation, four times as many women orgasm if you add clitoral stimulation. You might know that if you're a listener. We've talked about that a lot. Women need stimulation in addition to penetration, most women, in order to come. This is new research, new data that puts new numbers on that. We used to say 25% of women could come from penetration alone. Now we know that's even less, lower, 17%, just 17%. That's one of the amazing things you can learn at omgyes.com. You can also learn about edging, consistency, surprise, multiple orgasms, techniques like orbiting the clit, the ways in which you can pleasure, all of this really great info, scientifically sound, peer-reviewed, published research is available to you at omgyes.com. So if you have a clit, or love someone that does, you will want to send them to this site. You will want to join this site. OMGYes seeks to counteract the prevalent misinformation about sex that needs to be corrected and can only be corrected by empirical facts. They do scientific studies about sexual pleasure in partnership with researchers at Indiana University and the Kinsey Institute, then publish their findings in academic journals and on OMGYes.com. There you can get the distilled wisdom of thousands of women through videos that feel like hanging out with funny friends. See for yourself. You don't have to take my word for it. Explore new scientific findings about sex and hang out with your new funny friends and get 10% off OMGYes by going to omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage for 10% off.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 24-year-old female living in the Bay Area, and I had a question about being catcalled. I'm fairly attractive, and I get my fair share of catcalling, like many women, but the other day I experienced something that made me significantly more uncomfortable than usual. I was walking in my local park trail wearing tank top and fairly short running shorts, but nothing too risque, when I passed by a group of rough, older-looking gentlemen sitting around a picnic bench, and as I passed by, the normal catcalling started. However, out of the corner of my eye, I noticed one of them take out his cell phone and he began to snap pictures of me. I could tell he was taking pictures because of the snap sound that his phone made. So my question is, what does a woman do in this situation? I was too nervous for my safety to confront them. So what other options do I have? And also, is this a thing?
Unfortunately, this is certainly a thing, definitely a thing. Asshole dudes in public feeling entitled to catcall or ogle or even take photographs of women. These asshole dudes, I wouldn't describe them as gentlemen, which is the term of art you picked, but these asshole dudes are out there. And what should you do when you encounter them? You know, it'd be wonderful if everybody could deck an asshole who engaged that, although you don't want to escalate, and I'm not advocating physical violence, confront the asshole. Tell them that that's not okay. But you have to act in your own best interest in that moment, and if you felt unsafe, what you do is extricate yourself from that situation. I have been in, not an identical circumstance, but I think a kind of similar circumstance, at least as experienced, where some group of guys will call you a faggot, and you have to decide in the moment, am I going to stick up for myself? Am I going to push back? Am I going to flip that person off? Am I going to yell at that person, which could potentially make matters worse for me? Or am I going to ignore that asshole and keep on running or walking or going wherever the fuck that I was going? And there have been times when I have decided to confront people, when I have pushed back hard, and there have been times when I went, you know what? There's eight of them and one of me, and today's not the day. Or there's six of them and two of us, and I don't feel like risking your life just because I would like to go deck that guy. So we're going to walk on by. So I don't think that you have betrayed your gender, and I don't think you have failed feminism if you don't get in someone's face at a moment like that. I think you have to protect yourself first and foremost. But if you can confront someone who engages in those sorts of behaviors, I think it's a good idea to do it. But you need to make a spot assessment of the risk, the physical risk, the emotional risk, versus the potential reward of somehow stripping the asshole out of that person and making them a little less asshole-y to the next woman who should jog by in running shorts or a thong or whatever the fuck she wants to wear while she's jogging. If you want a good massage but do not have the time to go and get one or want to save time, have that massage come to you with Zeal. You pick the time. You pick the location. Have your next massage on demand at home. Just go to Zeal.com or on Zeal's iPhone or Android app. That's Zeal, spelled Zeel.com, and select from top local licensed and pre-screened massage therapists. Choose your favorite technique, gender preference, time, and location for your massage. All right. Full disclosure, massages are not something I get, but I happen to be married to someone who regularly gets massages for his famous bad back, and he is dragged into the office again today. So you tried out Zeal, because I can't, because yeah, I don't get massages.
I tried out Zeal.
And how did it go?
It went really well. Like, I've been searching for a sports massage therapist since mine, left town, and I can't find it.
Entered the witness protection exactly. program to get away
yeah.
from you.
Yeah. So I've been like really bumming out for the last couple of months, not being able to find a decent massage therapist. And I found one through Zeal.
And so how does the process work for people who are like, you get somebody just shows up at your house to give you a massage? That's going to be off-putting for some people, but
it was easy. It was easy. You download the app or you sign up online at Zeel.com, Zeel.com. And it was totally easy. The application process was totally easy. And there's a whole also screening process they do where you send in either like a copy of your driver's license front and back or your social security number. I chose driver's license. So you're screened. So the massage therapist is safe.
And
the massage therapists are screened.
So the massage clients are safe.
Yes. I chose a male massage therapist because I just prefer a male massage therapist. I chose what kind of massage I wanted, which was deep tissue sports massage, because that's what I have to get for, I exercise a lot and mm-hmm. have back issues. He came, he was on time. He set up his table in our back room. There was plenty of space for him to work. He was totally professional. He knew exactly what was going on with my body.
So this wasn't like some third-rate masseuse who couldn't get a job at a massage clinic.
No.
This was somebody
this good. This was somebody really good. He was totally professional, knew what he was doing, absolutely worked every muscle group that I asked him to work. He didn't do anything extraneous. You know, I didn't say like, I'd like work on my back, and then he started working on my hands or something. You know, he was very like attuned to like exactly what I wanted. And I just found the process like easy and amazing.
Sounds like the process was easy. Sounds like the massage was amazing. And if you need an easy, amazing massage 7 days a week, 365 days a year, a Zeel massage therapist can be at your door in as little as an hour. Privacy, convenience, quality, and comfort. That's what you get with your massage on demand with Zeel. So the scheduling and the booking was easy. You paid through the app and you don't have to tip.
No, you tip through the app. And the other cool thing is the app tells you exactly how much the massage therapist is being paid.
So you don't have to worry about exploiting the massage.
No, absolutely. So like I felt like, oh, that's an absolutely fair wage for like the awesome massage I just got.
Don't wait all week for a massage appointment at a spa when Zeel can come to you right away. Bring the spa to you and try Zeel today. Really, today, they're on demand. If you're the kind of person who gets massages, like my husband, you don't have to try it if you're not the kind of person who gets massages, like me. But if you are the kind of person who gets massages, Zeel is a great way to get one and a convenient way to get one. The massage of your life in your own home with Zeel. To help get you started, our listeners can get $25 off their first massage by using the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. And it gets better. Sign up for Zeel's massage membership and get 20% off all your massages, plus a free massage table and sheet set. That's a $380 value, yours free. There's no initiation fee to join the membership, just a great additional savings on top of the $25 discount you're going to get when you use the promo code SAVAGE. So go to Zeel, spelled Zeel.com, or on Zeel's iPhone or Android app, and then make sure to click add promo code at checkout to use my code SAVAGE and get $25 off your first in-home on-demand massage.
Hey, Dan. I am a 49-year-old gay guy, married guy, living in the South. And just recently, this past weekend, in fact, I traveled to a neighboring state to watch the eclipse happen, and it was very cool. But while I was there, my husband and I were walking down the street in a kind of medium-sized college town, right next door to the state that this college town is in. They recently passed and then repealed parts of a bathroom bill, so that's kind of the area where we're talking about. Anyway, it's a college town, and it was time for the kids to come back to class, back to school, so it was move-in weekend. And as my husband and I walked down the street, we passed by a young couple, male couple, holding hands. And behind them was, we believe they were there, one of their fathers, older gentleman who was, you know, kind of walking behind. And it was kind of an unremarkable moment. These two guys walking down the street, it wasn't the gayborhood or anything like that. It was just part of town. And I felt like I needed to acknowledge them in some way. I wanted to give them a thumbs up or something like that. But then I thought, why draw attention to it? It should be normal. It should be cool. It should be no big deal. But I felt like it was a big deal, especially in this town, in this city, in this part of town. I don't know. Should I have acknowledged it in some way? Should I have just let it go like I did? Maybe I should have reached over and grabbed my husband's hand as we walked past just to let them know we're in solidarity with you guys. Or I just felt it was a really nice moment, and I really wanted to acknowledge it, because even in this day and age, to see two guys holding hands is still a little bit rare, especially in that part of the world, in the southern United States. And so, I don't know, did I do the right thing by not acknowledging? Would it have been weird if I did acknowledge these two guys holding hands?
The dilemma here is, if you should, you know, smile at them or tell them, right fucking on, nice to see, hey, good on your dad, you could in that moment make what had been on their part, hopefully, and this is the world we all want to live in, an unselfconscious gesture, taking each other's hand. You could make them very terribly conscious of that gesture and maybe spoil the unselfconscious aspect of it, which is the world we want to live in, where it is literally no big deal, where no dude who's dating a dude or no woman who's dating a woman hesitates to take their boyfriend or girlfriend's hand in public because it's no big thing. But we don't live in that world, and it is a thing. And while it shouldn't be a big deal, it almost always is. There's almost always that moment's hesitation, that moment's self-consciousness where someone in a same-sex relationship scopes the environment, takes a quick look around to make sure that there isn't an alt-right white supremacist Nazi march coming up the other side of the street or whatever it is that you fear it might be. And so I think you could have risked a smile and a nod at them as a gay couple, as their future husbands, potentially, perhaps. And it wouldn't have ruined the unselfconscious, no big deal-ishness of the moment, because I promise you that there was, to some extent, to some degree, hopefully a small and diminishing degree with younger generations of queers, there was a moment's self-consciousness before they took each other's hand. And some subtle communication from you in that environment, and some subtle communication from a stranger in that environment, that not only wasn't the gesture offensive, but that you were touched by it, I think that would have been welcome. It would have helped bring us all a little bit closer to that world we want to live in, where it is no big deal, where people aren't self-conscious about taking the hand of their same-sex partner in public. That said, you have acknowledged it. This call acknowledges it. So even if in the moment you see something like that in public and you don't want to spoil it for them by making them more self-conscious, sharing the story with your friends, sharing the story as you just did on this show, is a way of bank shot acknowledging them and their bravery and what they were doing and how they were living their lives and how everyone should be free to live their lives. So you didn't acknowledge it in the moment, but you have acknowledged it. And their small gesture touched you, and you have, in a sense, paid it forward, as the saying goes, by calling in and sharing the story. And I'm sure you've also shared the story with your friends and with your family. So they threw a stone into the pond and created a ripple with your help that continues to spread.
Hey, y'all, it's Nancy. Have you ever had an idea that you knew needed a website, but you thought, ugh, I can't build a website? Do I look like some kind of computer wizard to you? Well, Squarespace makes it so easy to crank out a beautiful, professional-looking website or blog or even an online store. They have templates that were created by world-class designers, so you just plop them in there and blam, it looks good. And they have built-in e-commerce so you can sell stuff and make delicious money. There's nothing to patch or upgrade, and if you need help, they have 24/7 support. So you see. You can make it yourself so easily and make it stand out with Squarespace. Head on over to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com, offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. I was calling to inform you that I will be attending the Hump Film Festival when it comes to Sacramento, early September. And my question is, so I'm going to be at this porn film festival with a lot of sex-positive people in the audience. And after the show, I have a motel room booked, and the motel's less than a mile from the venue of the film festival. How do I spin this into a positive for me to get laid? I know a lot of you and your listeners might be thinking, this is a fucking easy situation. Sex-positive people all horned up from watching porn. How do you not close this deal? I don't know how. I'm 33. I'm not a virgin, but I don't have a lot of experience. My sexual escapades are few and far between, and oftentimes I have to pay a sex worker. I just don't know how to close the deal. I'm not a 10. I'm far from a 1. I just don't know how people do that sort of thing. You know, meet someone in a bar, go home with them, be in a one-night stand, or turn into a relationship. I would like all of the above. So, yeah. And I know it might be a little short notice to have it happen at the night of the film festival, but I guess in general, like, how do people do that? Like, that aspect is always not been something in my arsenal.
It's important as you move through life to have what I like to call realistic expectations. It is unrealistic to expect that just rolling into Hump, the porn film festival, which attracts a lot of sex positive people, is going to drop some pussy in your lap. So unrealistic of you to book that motel room in expectation of just being handed pussy on a platter because you happen to be one of the folks who attended the porn festival that night. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but often what I see at Hump, usually what I see at Hump, are people coming with friends and lovers, dates, couples come to Hump, throuples come to Hump. Every once in a while, somebody comes with their mom to Hump, which kind of freaks me out. I wouldn't go to a porn festival with my mother, and I'm a pretty sex positive guy myself, but more power to you and your relationship with your ma if that's the kind of thing that you can do with your mom on a Saturday night. Humpfilmfest.com if you want to get tickets for you and mom. So I want you to go to Hump, and I want you to enjoy yourself, and I want you to be open to possibility. That's how people do it who can close the deal. They're open to possibility, but they are not simmering with resentment. They're open to possibility, but they don't have unrealistic expectations about the likelihood of anything in particular happening at any given time or any given moment. So people who can close the deal, people who have game, are usually pretty relaxed and at ease. They don't raise the stakes in any particular moment by doing things like laying money out for a motel room in the hopes that they'll get laid, because that can then result in them seeming desperate to get laid because they've already sunk cost. They've already spent some money on this motel room, and that's going to go to waste if they don't find somebody right now tonight at this porn festival to get laid. And that aura, that energy that someone exudes when they go into anything with the expectation, perhaps the unrealistic expectation, that they're going to get whatever it is that they want out of that moment, that's unattractive. That drives people off. People can smell that sense of entitlement or that unrealistic expectation. And so you want to eradicate that. You want to be a little zen, and you've got to be a little zen. And I know it's hard for someone who hasn't had a lot of romantic or sexual success to be zen about it, to be at ease and at peace about things happening or things not happening. But that will make you more attractive. That will make things likelier to happen if you can be a little zen about whether or not they happen. There are people out there in the world who have a lot of sex. There are people out there in the world who can basically snap their fingers and have anybody they want, or that's how it seems, right? Because they can just line it up and knock it down. Doesn't sound like you're one of those people. You know what? I'm not one of those people either. I don't have great game. I stumbled into a relationship with the person I'd been jacking off about all my life and then one day met. And it happened by accident. And somebody with game pushed me at him. If that didn't happen, if a friend hadn't shoved me at my husband and told me to talk to him, I would never have spoken to him in that moment that we met. You need some wingmen. You need some friends who can do that for you, can play that role for you. Because you know that for whatever reason, that left your own devices and on your own, you can't close the deal on your own. I can't either. I'm right there with you. I am the same. So go to hump with a friend. If you don't have some friends, make some friends. And if you don't have friends, then you need not tickets to hump or in addition to tickets to hump, you need a therapist. You need someone that you can work with on your interpersonal skills so that you can begin to attract people. People with a lot of lovers often tend to have a lot of friends too. Attractive people attract people, not just people that they're going to fuck. So go to hump. Please enjoy hump. There will be a lot of sex positive people at hump. Almost by definition, you have to be a sex positive person to get those tickets and show up at that screening. But be at ease, be at peace, be zen about whether or not anything is going to happen. And tell yourself that most likely nothing will happen. You will not get laid. Go in there with no expectations. And then you will be potentially delighted if something should happen and grateful if it does rather than resentful if it doesn't. And get a therapist. Get someone to talk to. A lot of men actually pay sex workers for the conversation. And sex workers often have a really good read on the things that you may be doing that may be turning off people who might want to fuck you for free. So if you're seeing a sex worker regularly, you might want to ask for an honest critique and an honest download from that person. Most people I know who do sex work are very compassionate. They like the guys who are their clients. I know a lot of sex workers who've helped guys who are their clients transition from only being able to get laid when they paid for it to being able to get laid without having to pay for it by being not just their sexual outlet, but by being their therapist. So enjoy hump. Be open to possibility. Don't have unrealistic expectations. Don't be desperate. Don't be resentful. And get help.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 27-year-old gay male, and I have been in a monogamous relationship for a year with someone who I really thought I was going to marry and spend my life with. And I just found out that he has been blowing guys in steam rooms this whole time. And the irony here is that all along, I said I was open to open relationships and multiple times tried to have conversations about what that would look like and what we would do, what we wouldn't do, what we'd be okay with, what we wouldn't. And at no point did he ever mention that he was sleeping with other people throughout this entire time. And I'm really having a hard time wrapping my brain around it. What does that mean? I mean, how does someone who's presented the option of an open relationship just continue to lie through their teeth? What does that even look like? How do you reconcile that?
You ask why someone who, you know, an open relationship, an honest and ethical open relationship was on the table, why that person would do what your boyfriend was doing. And the answer is because he wanted to do what he wanted to do. He didn't want to negotiate with you about what he was allowed to do or not allowed to do. Because blowing guys in saunas appears to be his jam. And what if that wasn't okay with you?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's honestly was my greatest fear, was like that he just kind of was selfish about it and wanted to do something instead of having an honest conversation.
And so when now that you're having a conversation about what he's been up to, and I'm curious how you found out what he'd been up to. How did that happen?
An STI, which we actually think it's one of the ones that shows up, can come back after a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's highly possible that this actually didn't come from that. Especially where I found a bump on his ass, and mm-hmm. then I found one on my dick a couple weeks later. And if that's all he's doing in the steam room, that really wouldn't make sense of why that was there. The genital wart.
You're sexually active gay men in your late 20s.
Right.
So the odds that you both have been exposed to HPV over the course of your life
are very
previously
high. Right.
Are very, very high. And so we don't want to, you know, we don't want to be slut shaming, irrational infants about this. It seems like,
absolutely not,
you know, by my reading, the sexually transmitted infection would seem to be unrelated to your boyfriend's activities in the sauna if they were limited to what he described. And even if they weren't limited to what he described, it's probably unlikely that there's a cause and effect here that can be established or even exists.
Right. Not the greatest way to explain to your boyfriend that this is what's been happening or something you would like.
It's interesting that your boyfriend took the opportunity of this sexually transmitted infection, which could be unrelated to his activities, to come clean with you about what he'd been up to.
Well, I mean, what happened was we didn't have sex the night when he had been out of town. He came back. We didn't have sex the night before. And then we woke up in the morning and he just like got up and walked into the shower. And then I was like, is it? And he just kind of tried to pretend like nothing was weird about that. I walked into the shower like, is there something you want to tell me? Because it doesn't really feel like you're just running late for a meeting or you have to be somewhere. It feels like you're avoiding something right now. So I kind of forced the hand a little bit.
And that's when he revealed to you he had a wart on his butt and you had a wart on your dick?
No, I had seen those. So So the full story is I had found them. I had texted him and said, hey, I found this bump and I had seen one on you. I think we should both get them looked at. Because in the moment, you're kind of just like, I don't know, this could be anything. It could just be a pimple. It could be something. And then, you know, when it wasn't going away, I was like, both of these things are probably
HPV.
More than that.
Right.
Right.
But how in this conversation about HPV did the whole sauna games come out?
Well, so at the start of this relationship, I had said, you know, we talked about what our terms were. And I had said, I don't really care if you make out with someone in a bar every once in a while. I don't care if you give a hand job in the steam room every once in a while. And I had assumed, potentially wrongfully so, that was the start of a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think he took that as blank permission. And so in the shower, when we were talking about all this, he was like, well, you know how you said I was okay if I could do that? Well, I've been doing that and I've also been blowing guys in the steam room. And I was like, I had no idea what was going on. Thought we were going to talk about it.
And he thought you had talked about it.
No, I think he knew that was wrong. We had had like one brief conversation that I said, this is sort of something, because we've had a number of conversations where we've talked about monogamy isn't something we want in the end game. But I had always sort of said, I don't really feel like we're necessarily there yet. The relationship's only a year out at this point. It doesn't feel like that's fully something we're ready for yet.
Okay, so but zooming out for a second, you were open to having a non-monogamous relationship and open to having an open-ended non-monogamous relationship with him. You pictured him as someone you might want to be with for the rest of your life. And he knew that. And he got over his skis, or he began doing things that he could rationalize to himself that perhaps he already had obtained your consent to do. And that's a self-serving rationalization on his part. And I think a dishonest reading of the conversation that you described having with him on his part. But you need to ask yourself, you know, in a sense, your boyfriend moved you into a house that you thought you might want to live in someday. And he moved you into it right now. And that wasn't okay. You don't move people into houses. You don't buy a house without talking to your partner. And you can be angry about the fact that he just went and did it. If you're interested in staying in this relationship, you need to ask yourself, do I want to live in this house? And do I want to live in this house with someone who would do this? With someone who's clearly revealed himself to you as a person who will engage in self-serving rationalizations to avoid conflict, to get what he wants, to have the freedom to do what he wants. And you're in a position to assess whether, you know, about how remorseful he is, about, you know, these conversations that you're having now that it's all on the table, about whether or not you think you can trust him going forward. Trust him with your physical safety, your emotional safety, your sexual safety. Trust that he's going to be honest with you. And some people like having secrets. Some people like having a secret second life. Some people want the dishonesty, not because the dishonesty allows them to have the sex that they want, but the dishonesty is something that they enjoy. Or the deceit, that secret second life. And if he's that, then that's not going to stop. He's always going to have something's going on that you don't know about. So you need to drill down with him about what the fuck this was about.
Yeah.
And what motivated?
I mean, the other thing too is like, I had also found out that he had Grindr on his phone and had promised that it was just talking. But there's just a lot of, like, it seems like each new conversation we have, there's like something else we uncover that I'm like, Jesus, when was that happening?
Oh my God, Occam's Razor. You know, there are people out there definitely who have Grindr on their phone just to chit chat. They annoy a lot of people who have Grindr on their phone because they're looking for dick, not chit chat. And your boyfriend might have been one of them, but somebody who's already blown dudes in showers, knowing that's a violation of his relationship and the agreement he has with his current boyfriend, that guy with Grindr on his phone, the obvious answer is probably the truth. And the obvious answer, he's probably been hooking up with people from Grindr too. You know, it's a short jump from my boyfriend says it's okay for me to give hand jobs to guys in the locker room, maybe, to, well, if I'm giving a hand job, I might as well suck the dick, to, well, if I'm already sucking guys off in locker rooms, what's the difference between sucking a guy off in a locker room or sucking a guy off quickly in his apartment because we hooked up on Grindr? Like, there's the steps in this rationalization process that have allowed probably him to do much, much more than you are comfortable with. And he hasn't been honest with you. That's what I would encourage you to go drill down with him about. Is part of the turn on the dishonesty? And
I think it might be.
And the secret second life and me being an idiot and a fool and you getting away with things. And for some people, that's it. There are people in relationships who don't mind that their partner has secrets and kind of enjoy the fact that their partner is a mystery to them or maybe doing more than they're aware of and are kind of aroused by it. You're not that guy. There are guys out there who might enjoy having for a boyfriend a dude who has secrets. But if you're not going to be comfortable in an open relationship or in a relationship with someone who is deceitful and has secrets and puts you at risk in ways emotionally or physically that you're not comfortable with or that you can never trust in the sexual realm or any other realm, not to take a statement of, well, maybe at some point, and then just run and do whatever the fuck he wants to do because you said, well, maybe at some point we could blank. You've only got a year invested in this guy. Unless he has some really great explanations and not rationalizations and not bullshit and you feel comfortable, you feel you can trust him again, you've only got a year in. You might want to get out.
Right. Yeah.
Do you already live together?
No. No kids, no pets, don't live together. It's easy enough to walk away for sure. I mean, harder said than done. Easier said than done. But
could you live with a boyfriend who you couldn't trust out of your sight?
I don't think so. I really don't.
It wouldn't turn you on to have a boyfriend you couldn't trust out of your sight?
No.
Probably not the boyfriend for you then. I'm so sorry.
It's all right. I mean, tough advice, what you're here for.
I'm sorry, dude. I'm really sorry. You're 27.
Okay.
You're really young. And you're and you sound really rational and reasonable, and you need a rational and reasonable guy who can have a rational and reasonable conversation about openness and not be a deceitful sack of shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good luck. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Dan.
Hey, Dan. Divorced, father of two. I really fucked up, I think. My daughter, who is 8 years old, was looking on my phone earlier today through my photographs. And just now later in the evening, I realized that I had a couple of pictures of my dick on there, all ready to, be sent to my girlfriend. My daughter did not say anything, but I can't imagine how she did not see them. I feel like a real irresponsible shitbag and don't know what to do. Do I bring it up to her? Do I wait until she says something? Help.
This isn't a conversation that you can duck. You're not going to be able to wait until your daughter brings it up, particularly because there's an ex-wife involved here. You are divorced. You have an eight-year-old. You are co-parenting. You don't mention what kind of relationship you have with your ex-wife, but if you have a high conflict relationship with your ex, what could happen if your daughter were to go to your ex-wife and say, Dad showed me pictures of his dick? How would that play with your ex-wife? Do you have a good co-parenting relationship? Did you part amicably? Are you on friendly terms? Is your ex-wife sex positive? Does she also send and receive dirty sex with the guys that she's dating, or is she sex negative and that's one of the reasons you're divorced? Something you need to think about as you weigh what to do. In the end, though, you are going to have to address this. Even if your wife was totally cool, you are going to have to address this. And if your wife is totally cool and totally sex positive and you have a good and amicable relationship and a good co-parenting relationship with her, I do think you should mention this to her, that this happened and that you need to have a conversation with your daughter about it. And then that conversation needs to be an age-appropriate conversation about what your dick was doing on your phone. That adults flirt in this way, oh, brave new world that has such apps in it. This is how adults flirt. Sometimes adults will take naughty or risque pictures of their privates and share them just with one other special person that they love and that they trust, and then emphasize the trust part. But it's nothing that a child should see or do, and you want to apologize to her for leaving those pictures where she might stumble over them, and you will take steps to make sure that that doesn't happen again. It would be good to enlist your wife in advance of having that conversation with your kid, because after you have that convo, the odds that your kid will ask mom about it too jump. But I think this is something you need to get out in front of instead of waiting for your daughter to bring it up with you or to bring it up with your ex-wife. I think you need to bring it up with your daughter in an age-appropriate way. You need to bring it up with her. And at 8 years old, your daughter knows what sex is and she knows how adults are. She's encountered a lot of media in her life. She's witnessed the relationship that her parents had with each other, the relationships that her parents are now having with others. So she's not oblivious to the existence of sex and desire and attraction and flirtation. This is one manifestation of the flirt, one way that people do it. And that's why those pictures were on your phone. And I think your daughter at 8 years old can handle that information. And it's better for her to have that information than to wonder why those pics were on your phone and how it is that she found them or why you let her find them. Good luck, Dad.
Hi there. I'm just calling in regards to episode 568 about the woman who was concerned that her boyfriend was potentially sleeping with an ex or had really close relations. I think that whether or not he's sleeping with her is like redundant. I think that her boyfriend is definitely emotionally cheating on her. It's too close for comfort. I think this woman needs to, you know, if you're going through his texts and if he's hanging out so much with an ex, even if it's friendly, there seems to be like no respect for any sort of boundaries with the new relationship. So I think she needs to end this relationship, cut him off, and be done and not be friends with him.
Hey everyone. I'm calling in response to the caller who found text messages of her boyfriend and his ex while he was showering there. You need to definitely not stay with this person. Even if you have a little bit of crazy in you about it, like Dan said, you tell somebody that you're showering at your ex's house. And also, I feel like you just need to trust your gut. Like, you know their flirtation is a little more than normal, and that doesn't sit right with you. If you felt like nothing could happen, then you would feel comfortable with even a little bit of flirtation. I have experience of, you know, an ex of mine going back to her ex, marrying her, and then having babies. So, and when they started becoming friends again, it didn't sit right with me. And she worked with her ex the whole time. But yet, when their relationship got more intimate is when it started not to feel right with me, and I was right. Whether you tell them you read the text or not, to me, is irrelevant. You know what you know. Get out of it.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about the woman in 568 who found poop porn on her boyfriend's old computer account. I think a key piece of information that was unclear from her call was if the ex-wife's poop stuff was Photoshopped into the memes. If he just digitally added the shit, then that strongly suggests that he hadn't involved his ex in this aspect of his sexual fantasy. From recall, it seemed that they both were GGG about their sexual interests. So if he didn't disclose the poop thing, then he probably wants to keep that part just in the realm of internet make-believe. If I found poop pics on my husband's computer, I would just be grateful that he didn't feel the need to involve me. She should definitely not discuss it with him. If he's not inclined to bring it up with his significant others, she does not need to live in fear about him involving her somewhere down the road. All she needs to do is, at some time, when appropriate, just casually bring up the fact that she doesn't find feces stuff erotic, and he will get the message.
And we're going to leave it there. Before I give you the phone number, go to savageatlovecast.com. We have a brand new, shiny website. You can get the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast at our website. You can also subscribe to the Magnum edition, which is nearly twice as long and has no ads. The ad-free Magnum edition, extra guests, extra questions. Subscribe to it at savageatlovecast.com. If not, continue, please, to enjoy the micro edition. All right, 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment, and we love your comments for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. Tickets are on sale now for the Hump Film Fest in Seattle and Portland. These are the voting screenings where audiences get to pick the best of Hump. If you're in Seattle or Portland or want to vote on the best of Hump this year, get your ass to Seattle and Portland. Go to humpfilmfest.com for tickets. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Mark Joseph Stern on Twitter at MJS_DC. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for coming.